We have a special offer for first-time donors to Issues Etc. For any size gift during the months of January and February, we'll send you an autographed copy of Pastor Will Wheaton's new book, Thank, Praise, Serve, and Obey, Recover the Joys of Piety. Make your first-time contribution online at issuesetc.org or send your check to Issues Etc., Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234, and we'll send you an autographed copy of Thank, Praise, Serve, and Obey. There are not a lot of people around who remember this. Well, there are a lot of people around who remember it, but of the Me Too generation, perhaps not a lot who remember it. That Me Too movement has turned its sights on an old story, a story that is, well, going on 30 years old. Now, if you were old enough at the time to watch television, the early days of the 24-hour news cycle, even though it wasn't 24 hours at the time, there was a story that dominated the news involving, well, of all things, a Supreme Court justice nomination and a confirmation hearing before the Senate. The issue was sexual harassment. That man went on to become a Supreme Court justice, Justice Clarence Thomas, and yet there are people now in the Me Too movement who would like to revisit that entire issue. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to be talking with Holly Shear about the Me Too movement and Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. She is a Lutheran pastor's wife, mother of four children in Cheyenne, Wyoming, author of a recent column for The Federalist titled Attempting Another Hit Job on Clarence Thomas Only Hurts Me Too's Credibility. Holly, welcome back.
Thanks for having me on today, Todd.
So why are some in the Me Too movement suggesting that Justice Thomas be impeached?
Basically, this all goes back to 1991, like you said, and his confirmation hearings. They want to revisit the testimony of Anita Hill, and they're reaccusing him of perjury from his testimony at that time. So they want to basically try him all over again.
So if you would just give us a history of this entire event when Justice Thomas was nominated, and then the confirmation hearings. What's the nutshell story of how it went for him?
Sure. Anita Hill, who was someone who worked with him in the EEOC, which was the Equal Opportunity Committee, was an employee under him, and in the confirmation hearings, she came forward to accuse him of sexual harassment, that he was her employer, and that he had been discussing pornography with her, and it had made her very uncomfortable. And she had given very inconsistent testimony to the FBI and the Senate Judiciary Committee, and the American people at the time were continually being polled about the issue and very strongly supported Clarence Thomas. She was the only person at the time who testified under oath, and still at the time has testified under oath. She did not have a consistent story about this. None of the other women who worked for Thomas in any of his positions were willing to testify and corroborate her story. None of Anita Hill's friends had a consistent story. One of her friends who tried to give an account to kind of bolster her story, she said that the time that this happened, Hill did not even live in D.C. or work with Thomas at this time, and it really actually shook her story even further. It was basically a smear campaign against him. And by the time she was done, the Senate Judiciary Committee approved his appointment to the Supreme Court.
Why, in the light of some in Me Too, the Me Too movement suggesting that Justice Thomas be impeached, why do you want to talk about due process?
So due process is really an important constitutional right that we as all Americans have. It's one of the only things that we have twice in the Constitution. We have it in the Fifth and the 14th Amendments. And that's a really important thing to notice. You know, when our founding fathers went through and they wrote the Constitution, they weren't there to waste time and put down words that didn't matter. And when they said that people should not be deprived of life, liberty, or property without the due process of law, they were really telling us that we weren't going to be dragged before the court for no reason. and lose our livelihood, lose our property, lose our jobs for no reason. And if we can be hauled before the media for totally unsubstantiated reports and lose our jobs, as we see people doing, that should be a scary thing for people no matter what the accusations are. It should be important that when you're accused of something, you should actually have to go to court and have these accusations be proved. We don't want to have this start being something where people get angry at you or something happens, maybe something even that's true, and a media story can derail your whole life. We should actually kind of pause and take emotion out of this and take a hard step back and say, that's actually really terrifying no matter where you stand on this issue. We're a nation of laws, and we're a nation where these laws protect victims, they protect the accused, these laws protect everyone. And no one is saying the court system is perfect. It's absolutely not. But it is absolutely a better system than trying things in the media.
Why do you also want to talk about the statute of limitations? Why is it a two-edged sword in cases like this?
The statute of limitations is important because people, when something bad happens, you should go to court and you should have a judge and jury listen to all of the evidence, listen to the facts, and pass judgment on it. And when the statute of limitations runs out, it means you don't have the opportunity to do that anymore. But on the other side, it means when someone comes and makes accusations against you and the statute of limitations runs out, you also don't have the ability to prove your innocence anymore. The statute of limitations in sexual harassment and also in perjury has run out for cases in the early 90s. So it means when someone is innocent or when they're guilty, they cannot go to court to prove that either way. So if you're an innocent person, the court cannot prove that for you. It also means that if you are accusing someone of something, you can't go to court to prove that. So it's really important to keep in mind when someone has wronged you, you need to keep the statute of limitations in mind, and you need to go to court to accuse them. And when someone is accusing you of something, you need to make sure that the courts hear that case and deal with it before the statute of limitations runs out, or you will not be able to have a court decision to prove your innocence. So it's really important no matter which side of the case you're on.
In the 27 years since the charges were made against then nominee Thomas, how credible have those charges proven to be? How have people who've looked at it in legal sense, what kind of conclusions have they drawn?
They really have not been found to be terribly credible. The media networks, HBO, ran this really kind of tawdry faux documentary about it, and they totally created people who were not involved in the story at all, and they made up timelines and all sorts of things because they weren't telling the story, they were telling a story. And you know how it is when people watch things on TV and they think that's history, and it's becoming more and more of a problem for millennials and the generations after. We watch something on TV and we go, oh, that's what happened. It's not what happened. Lawyers who were involved in the case, people who were actually in the White House at the time, people have actually stepped forward and said, you know, you need to actually look at the facts, you need to look at the reams of documentation about this. It's not really credible at all. Clarence Thomas has an impeccable history. He has lots of women who worked for him at the EOC and the Department of Education. Many of these women actually had been sexually harassed at other jobs before and came forward to testify that, you know, they had been sexually harassed before, and he was beyond reproach. He made them feel comfortable. He made them feel safe. He did not do anything that made them feel unsafe. And he has been a staunch pro-life advocate at the Supreme Court. This is not someone that we need to sit here and try to remove.
In the time since she made the accusations, has Anita Hill said anything, done anything to kind of call her credibility on the issue of sexual harassment or sexual indiscretion into question?
I don't think that going after people who are putting themselves forward as victims is always the best thing to do. But Anita Hill has continued to put herself in the spotlight to kind of grab that spotlight. She put herself forward, particularly when then President Bill Clinton was, you know, being tried in his impeachment hearings. And she made some really troubling statements that because he was such a defender of liberal values that all of the accusations against him needed to kind of be brushed to the side, that because he supported things that she found important, that none of the things he was being accused of mattered. And I think we need to take her viewpoints against the actions that, you know, Bill Clinton took against women and took against quite a few women, have come forward against then President Bill Clinton, and we need to consider how she feels when it's women on the other side.
Justice Ginsburg has recently expressed some concern about the Me Too movement. What did she have to say?
You know, I think that's really fascinating because Justice Ginsburg is not someone that we would really consider to be a conservative person, right? She has been on the Supreme Court and she has been kind of a difficult person for conservative people to tolerate on there. But when she talked about the Me Too movement, she said the person who is accused has a right to defend herself or himself, and we certainly should not lose sight of that, recognizing that there are complaints that should be heard. And I think it is fascinating that she, too, is kind of saying, whoa, we need to slow down and we need to maintain due process, too. And I think it's really excellent that Justice Ginsburg is recognizing that, too.
So how do we negotiate the line between giving the alleged victims the opportunity to speak and be heard, to bring accusations, to be quite honest, and needlessly ruining reputations?
Well, I think the place to speak and be heard is that if something happens, then you need to follow the legal system. You know, we have an excellent legal system in America. It is not perfect, and when something happens, you need to follow and go report it. And hopefully the legal system does not fail you. And hopefully the people around you can kind of circle around you and support you. And it makes it much easier than to sit there and not have to deal with the issues we're dealing with right now with the Anita Hill situation.
Finally, then, is the Clarence Thomas kind of a lesson in what can happen to a man's reputation, albeit he does have a stellar record for 27 years as a Supreme Court justice? They're well respected within legal circles. But when he dies and the obituaries are written, they will probably have in the first paragraph the accusations of Anita Hill. What kind of lesson does that teach us about the way we bring these accusations publicly?
You know, I think that everybody made fun of Vice President Pence when he talked about he doesn't meet with women without his wife present and how careful he is about being beyond reproach. And I think there's a lesson in that, and it's not a lesson that we should have to learn. And it is really unfortunate that you can have a legacy that should be really strong and accusations can really knock it down so far. I hope that's not the case here, and I hope that by the time his obituary is being written, hopefully far, far in the future, this will be such a tiny blip on the radar that it won't matter.
Holly Scheer is a Lutheran pastor's wife and mother of four children in Cheyenne, Wyoming, author of a recent column for The Federalist titled "Attempting Another Hit Job on Clarence Thomas Only Hurts Me Too's Credibility." You can read it under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Holly, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you for having me on.
When we come back on this Friday afternoon, we're going to be talking about one of the church's earliest martyrs, not the first, of course. The first is, well, Christ himself and Stephen and James. But soon after the apostolic era, perhaps even within the pale of it, there is a martyr who was famous in his day and famous to this day, Polycarp of Smyrna. We'll talk about him with Pastor Will Wheaton right after this.
In Romans 15, Paul tells us, "Therefore welcome one another as Christ has welcomed you for the glory of God." But what does Christian welcome really look like? Find out this month in the Lutheran Witness magazine as we explore hospitality, diversity, and what these ideas mean for Lutheran Christians today. Subscribe or read a sample issue at cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Lutheran Federal Credit Union was formed to serve you and to serve the church. During February, when you open a Lutheran FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or when you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to their Ministry of the Month, Family Shield Ministries. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran FCU. Good for you. Good for the church. LutheranFCU.org.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We have a special offer for first-time donors to Issues Etc. For any size gift during the months of January and February, we'll send you an autographed copy of Pastor Will Wheaton's new book, Thank, Praise, Serve, and Obey, Recover the Joys of Piety. Make your first-time contribution online at issuesetc.org or send your check to Issues Etc., Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234, and we'll send you an autographed copy of Thank, Praise, Serve, and Obey.
Do you long for a church that celebrates the divine service with reverence and joy, but without the unbiblical baggage imposed by a supposedly infallible hierarchy? Do you long for a church that confesses a divinely instituted office of the holy ministry for the giving of the Lord's gifts to his people and yet values and lifts high the priesthood of all believers? Welcome to the Lutheran Church. We're what you've been looking for. Find an historic, authentic church near you on the Find a Church page at issuesetc.org.